This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. The 1974 super outbreak of tornadoes was one of the deadliest and most destructive spring storm systems recorded in U.S. history. Some of the strongest tornadoes recorded on April 3rd and 4th of that year occurred in the Ohio Valley, in Xenia and Sailor Park. Joining me now to talk about their memories of those storms and about the life-saving advances that have come since are University of Cincinnati Adjunct Instructor of Media Production, Tom McKee. Welcome, Tom.
Glad to be here.
Fox 19 Now Chief Meteorologist Steve Horstmeyer. Thanks for being here, Steve.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure, Lucy.
Greene County, Ohio Historical Society Executive Director Catherine Wilson. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you for having me on.
And Sailor Park Historical Society President Jackie Litchfield Apted. Thanks for being here, Jackie.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Steve, explain what happened from a meteorological perspective with the super outbreak 50 years ago. What were the conditions that created such a large number of these powerful tornadoes?
Well, when you look at it, really the controlling and energy factor in any big storm system is the jet stream. And there was a particularly strong series of jet streams. A big low pressure system formed over the plains. It forced very warm, moist air northward. And because this was such an energetic system, as it moved into the tri-state, it just spawned an incredible number of tornadoes, the second most in any outbreak in recorded history. And it's something that we haven't quite seen yet, because to get a system like this, all the elements have to come together just right. And they did that. And after years and years of study, meteorologists are still amazed at exactly what happened that day.
And Steve, how powerful were these storm systems?
Well, I tell you, it's not the number one outbreak in number of tornadoes, but it still has either six or seven, depending upon who you talk to, F5 tornadoes, and most of those had winds in excess of 175 miles an hour. And no other outbreak, even ones with twice the number of tornadoes, the one in 2011, have had that many really strong tornadoes. And it goes down to F3s, F4s, F5s, still more of those strong tornadoes than any other outbreak.
Tom, where were you working when these storms hit, and what do you remember most about covering these storms?
Well, I had just joined Channel 9 as a reporter back in 1974, so I'd been there 12 weeks. And my first assignment of the day was the warning sirens. The sirens in Hamilton County went off, and nobody knew what they were because it was the first time they'd ever gone off. So myself and a photographer were sent out to find one and get the video and get the audio. So that was the beginning of the day for me, at least.
And what do you remember most about covering the storms and the aftermath, the devastation?
Well, we were on I-75 after checking out a possibility of a kid trapped in a culvert in Winton Terrace. We were on I-75 when the police scanner in our car snacked out possible tornado at Quarter Tech High School, which is now Cincinnati State. Mm. We were literally around the bend from there. And I thought, oh, my God, are we driving into a tornado? No. We got around the bend, and there it was dancing over the hilltops far away. We stopped and got video, and then we went out to Green Township, Mack and Bridgetown on Starview Drive and found people struggling out of their homes. I can remember a Corvette, a yellow Corvette in a front lawn upside down, that sort of thing. We were there within 15 minutes of the storm hitting.
Catherine and Jackie, I know you were both living in parts of the region that were hit hard. Jackie, how old were you when these storms came through, and what do you remember about them in Sailor Park?
I was 16 when the storms came through, and we were all amazed at the hail balls. And that's what triggered us, that was not normal, and, you know, we needed to do something. And then our mom, you know, called us in, and we were glad to go.
Yeah.
So she ushered us to the basement, and we stayed there until it was over.
Oh. Catherine, what about you? How old were you? What do you remember most about when these storms came through Xenia?
I was 9, and we had been to school. My younger sister and I had been to school like normal, and it started to sprinkle a little bit in the afternoon. So we came in, but we didn't have a basement. We did see the storm coming, the big cloud that was kind of boiling, and I had a little tornado book and said to my mom, is that a tornado? And so she said, go get in the bathroom. Because that was the only interior room with no windows. So we got in there and wrote it out.
And Catherine, was your home damaged? What did you, when you could finally leave the bathroom, what did you see?
Well, the first thing we saw was blue sky through the roof and a purple washcloth just below the hole in the roof. And we'd never had a purple washcloth before. So, yeah, our house was damaged. Most of the roof came off. And the windows all were broken except one.
Jackie, what do you remember about damage in Sailor Park? Was your home damaged? What memories come to mind for you?
Well, our house was up for sale, and the lady didn't want to buy our house because there were too many trees. So two trees fell into each other, and so then she wanted to buy the house.
Oh.
But what I remember most was when we, you know, went outside, we had just bought a new camper. There are six kids, and we had this little bitty camper. And now we had this beautiful camper with everything in it, all the, you know, upgrades, and it was damaged. It was ruined.
Did those trees fall on it, or was it other stuff?
It was the wind. Mm. It was the wind.
Well, I'll tell you, I was 6 years old and lived in Park Hills, Kentucky, and I can remember one of my neighbors stayed on her front porch to try to see when the storm was coming, and my mom said that we're not doing that.
No,
we're going to go down the basement. We're not going to watch the tornado. Jackie, did these storms change you, your parents, your families, and the way you think about severe weather this time of year? I mean, that's a heck of a thing to live through.
Well, I think my mom was so scared, and the fear in her eyes has never left me. And I do prepare, and I do try to tell people, you have to be ready. You have to be ready to go somewhere. And I don't think it scared me. Even though I never saw it or heard it, it wasn't that it scared me. It just was my mom seeing her scared.
Yeah. What about you, Catherine? Did this change the way you think about weather this time of year? Did it change, you know, your parents, your family members, and who lived through all this?
I believe so. All of us have weather radios, mm-hmm. and yesterday's potential storms really kind of, we were all texting each other last night.
Mm. I bet. Well, we're talking about the 1974 super outbreak of tornadoes. Do you have memories about the storm or questions about tornado safety or forecasting? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Steve, what did the 1974 super outbreak help teach us about tornadoes and forecasting? It seems like there were a lot of lessons learned from that.
Absolutely. And before I go into that, I just want to mention that I actually saw that tornado. I was working in a gas station outside of Loveland as a junior in college. A car broke down of a customer's. We went out to pick it up. We were in between Milford and Loveland on around 275, and we saw it come out of the river valley and cross Delhi, Mac, and the other areas, and it was an amazing sight. I had not yet become a meteorologist, and so that kind of helped me decide what I wanted to do. But to get back to your question, Ted Fujita and Dr. Greg Forbes, Fujita is the F-scale guy, Dr. Greg Forbes, who was the Weather Channel's weather expert for severe weather, both studied that extensively. Forbes was his assistant. And by using photogrammetric techniques, they got every single bit of photographic and movie evidence they could. They used that to measure the path of debris, and it was painstakingly hard to do back then. They had to measure each little piece of debris, how far it went, how fast it got there. They were able to figure out that the winds were rising at 160 miles an hour in the Sailor Park tornado. And what they got to know from the outbreak in general and the Sailor Park tornado in particular was how the air flowed, how the storm itself evolved, and where the debris went after it went up through the tornado. So it was historic in its strength and the effect it had, but it was also historic from a scientific standpoint because it was just a very, very important piece of evidence as to how tornadoes worked.
Did you want to add to that, Tom?
Yeah, to pick up on that, what I remember very vividly in the aftermath of that was that there were two tornadoes that formed over northern Kentucky that came across the Ohio River and joined to hit Sailor Park. And then tornadoes normally don't go into valleys. They don't follow the contour of the land. This one did as it went into Mackin Bridgetown, from what the National Weather Service had said at the time. So the damage to Sailor Park, for instance, instead of one tornado which may be 300 yards wide, it was about a half mile wide, coming across and going literally straight through Sailor Park, taking out the houses, taking out the elementary school at the base of the hill, and then it went up into Mackin Bridgetown very, very fast, but it followed the contour of the land. Mm.
That explains the fear in your mother's eyes that you saw for sure, Jackie, huh?
It does.
Yeah.
We'd never seen anything like that before. We'd never seen hail.
Yeah.
So that was just something to play with.
Mm. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Well, Channel 9 had a little bit of a thing to do about the warning at the time. Mm-hmm. Channel 9 ran a movie from 4 to 6 every day. And somebody during this outbreak, when the weather siren sounded for the first time, had the presence of mind to open the studio doors and push a regular studio camera outside. So people were, and they broke into the programming, they were looking at the tornado live as it came through, was formed and hit Sailor Park and Mack and Bridgetown. It's incredible. The images are incredible.
Oh my gosh.
To this day, yeah.
Yeah. Steve, talk about the improvements we've seen in forecasting and warning systems over the past 50 years. I mean, Tom said that this was the first time Hamilton County's sirens had gone off. But what are some of the innovations that could have reduced injuries and the loss of life if we'd had them 50 years ago?
The first step after the sirens was the NOAA weather radio system that was deployed. And that was really designed, even though most people don't realize this, it was designed to let people who are outdoors know that something was coming, not so much if you were indoors. And then, of course, technology has evolved since then. So now the newest technology that really helps keep people safe is weather apps. Now, every TV station has their own weather app. The Weather Channel has their own weather app. They're all similar, but they can literally, A, alert you when you're carrying your phone in your pocket, and B, most of them have the ability to follow you, so it knows your geographic location, and it will let you know the warnings and that are coming your way, that are just coming your way. So, for example, if you're in Bridgetown, it won't alert you to a warning for Anderson Township, for example. One of the things they found when in the early days when they issued warnings, they'd issue them for an entire county. And if you issued a warning for an entire county, only a very small part of that county, in most cases, was being affected by the tornado or the severe storm, and people began to think it was a cry wolf issue and just started to ignore them. But now that we can be specific about it, people are taking them more seriously. And then in addition, we now have Doppler radar, and Doppler radar literally can see inside the storms. And for example, last night, yesterday afternoon it was, we saw the tornado that was coming into the Cincinnati area a little while ahead of time and knew in plenty of time to warn people that it was going to move into, let's say, Switzerland County. Excuse me. So weather radio went to the new app system that everybody has. And then, of course, technology on the meteorological side really relies on Doppler radar, which is an amazing, amazing tool.
Yeah. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Andy. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment was, I was in Cincinnati at the time, around 1920, and I was lost in a building at UC looking for a professor's office. And a security guard, UC security guard, came by, and we were just talking, and then we walked to a stairwell that was glass enclosed. You know, it had a glass window on it, and we were having a cigarette at the time. You could do it. And we looked out, and I swear I saw one of the tornadoes come over the river. It looked greenish, and then another one seemed a little further away that was darker. And was that do to foliage in the tornado? We didn't think anything about it at the time. He said, I'm from Hawaii. It happens all the time. And I'm like, having no idea
wow.
the severity of the situation. Not a clue.
Yeah.
Standing by a window.
Yeah, that does not sound like it. You were saying you were 19 or 20 at the time at UC?
Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
Right.
Let's see.
Well, I was visiting UC, actually. You know,
yeah. What do you think, Steve? What could explain the color that Andy saw in the storm? Any ideas there?
Well, absolutely. The way where you're looking at it and where the sun is are the two important things. So generally, if the sun's behind you, it, of course, the tornado's more lighted. It appears lighter in color. And then if it's off to one side or the other, you generally get that greenish color because of the way the light is filtered, not only through the dust and that, but through the water drops. And if the light source, the sun, is directly behind the tornado, it usually looks big and really dark and foreboding. So it all has to do with where the light is, how much moisture is in the atmosphere. There are a lot of variables there, but essentially almost every color you can imagine has been reported at one time or another as the tornado approaches.
Interesting. Thanks for that call, Andy. Really interesting question. Tom, what lessons did you learn about reporting on these types of natural disasters? I know you were fresh 12 weeks in when this happened, but do you feel like it changed? Did news coverage change as a result of this or not? What kind of lessons were learned on that side of things?
I don't think news coverage changed per se. The stories of the individual people affected are what you're going to be telling. When we went to Starview Drive, for instance, we found people who had just come out of their homes. We interviewed them about their experience. What did you hear? What did you see? What are you feeling? Those types of things are still, any tornado you're going to cover in today's society, you're going to ask those same questions. The tornadoes I've covered, whether it's Moscow or whether it's Crittenden or whether it's Blue Ash Montgomery, the same thing as always. What did you feel? Look at what's the damage. Tell us how you were. Tell us how your family is. Those sorts of things. So it hasn't changed us in that particular way. But the technology, as Steve was saying, for the meteorological side of things, the technology has changed. There were no cell phones back then. There were no live trucks. We were shooting film at the time. You had to come back to the station, put it through the processor for 23 minutes, and then you could see the images.
Mm-hmm.
So that's changed quite a bit. Technology, Bert Luginanni was the fire chief of Cincinnati at the time. He lived in Sailor Park. The power went out. The phones were out. He couldn't tell the fire department to send help. He found a Channel 9 news van, radioed two-way to us, and we told the fire department that there was a problem.
Wow.
So the technology has changed quite a bit.
Yeah. Catherine, you know, we were talking about that the weather was scary last night, obviously not as awful as it happened in 1974, but I'm sure it brought back some memories. Catherine, is this something you and your family and friends have talked about for the past 50 years? I guess I'm wondering what kind of lasting impression this experience has had for you.
Yes, we talk about it at least every April 3rd, and whenever there's a warning even close by, we text each other, call each other. We've told stories, and I've repeated the stories. Being part of the Historical Society, naturally people come here to hear the story, and then they hear I'm a survivor, so they want to hear my story in particular.
Yeah. Jackie, how about you? Is this something that you and your family talk about regularly, every year? What kind of lasting impression has this left on you?
I think the lasting impression for myself, even though my family and I talk about it, is that when you ask people that have been through the tornado, you know, they always remember. And they always remember how people helped them. You know, people came out of their homes and they went to where their friends were or, you know, wherever they went, and they helped. Everybody helped everyone. And, you know, that's how we got through. And that's how we got through with a peace of mind, because there was always someone there to help us.
Yeah. Tell me more about that helping that you saw.
Okay, well, there was people would come with chainsaws, and, you know, like the house I live in now, we lost four trees, and it went right over Home City, one of the trees did, and it was gone within no time. There were people that just helped, you know, clean up. You know, there was people that would talk to you, and a few days after the tornado, I went to school to help, you know, people, and they gave me the job of taking coffee to the linemen. So that was wonderful. That really helped them.
Tom, is that something that's at least heartwarming when you're walking into devastation like this as a reporter, seeing how people are working to help each other?
In the aftermath, yes, it is. I can remember my assigned area was Mack and Bridgetown, South Road, those types of things over the next couple of days. Elder High School kids, Oak Hills High School kids, Taylor High School kids, they swarmed the area to help out. Carry this, move that, do this. Can I help? Can I run an errand for you? Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And it just shows in any disaster, communities come together and they realize, there for the grace of God, go me. It could be me, so I'm going to pitch in and help.
Yeah. We got an email from Randy. Why do we see seemingly beautiful weather before a large storm or tornado? Steve, you want to answer that one?
Well, typically, tornadoes occur ahead of a cold front. And so as the cold front's approaching, it forces winds out of the south. So it typically warms up, gets a bit more humid, and you may have noticed the humidity yesterday. And with that comes a lot of sunshine often. And so you just have that weather that everybody kind of likes. Then when the storm gets here, of course, cooler air like we have today settles in. And you look at yesterday as, wow, it was so beautiful. Why do we have all those storms? And it's just the way things work at this latitude in this part of the world.
Yeah. Well, and Steve, we're running out of time, but in 10 seconds, what's the most important thing for people to do to be prepared this time of year?
Plan ahead. Know where you have to go when a storm approaches, and that way you don't have to think about it. You can get there fast.
Great. Well, I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Adjunct Instructor of Media Production, Tom McKee, Fox 19 Now Chief Meteorologist, Steve Horstmeyer, Greene County, Ohio Historical Society Executive Director, Catherine Wilson, and Sailor Park Historical Society President, Jackie Litchfield Apted. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can see some historical photos from the 1974 super outbreak, courtesy of our guests, on our website, wvxu.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.